afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. And I'm here with my co-host, Stafford Adask, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today is Thursday, May 4th, 2017. Good afternoon, Al.
Good afternoon, Melody.
I was listening to something on the radio.
Wait a second. Don't give me that. And you're female. You're supposed to be able to multitask without incident. Melody.
I was thinking of something else. It's a National Star Wars Day or something like that. And even in, I don't know if it was China or Japan, where they actually take the day off so they can dress up like Star Wars characters and so forth. And the reason they have
holiday?
The reason they have it on May 4th is so they can say, May 4th be with you. You know, May the 4th.
Oh, may the 4th be with you. Oh, my God.
I thought this morning, you know,
we need that in this country. You should contact your congressman. I mean, really, really, the way the circus is operating in this country, I think this is something we should have. May the 4th be with you. We all dress up like Han Solo or Jabba the Hutt.
I just thought, are you kidding me? But you know what? I was telling Al during prior to the program about something that I purchased and the warranty and all this kind of stuff, and everybody just pushes the buck, you know. And I'm just thinking to myself, you know, the people, this country, everybody is so busy. We're so busy trying to do something. No one's ever obligated to back up what they say. It's like an anthill. You know, you see ants and they're all just scurrying around.
Everybody's desperate to make more sales, but nobody's desperate to do more work.
Mm-hmm. And it's, folks, there's something wrong with the picture. And it was a very bad picture for gold today. Good for you buyers. You guys got some great deals today on gold and silver. And so let me go ahead and bring up those prices today. A lot of pressure on gold. And again, I think it's going to last until tomorrow. You have gold down 9 at $1,229. We had a low of $1,225, so it did come back $4 or $5. Silver's down another 16 cents at $16.39, although platinum managed to turn around up 6 at $9.07, if you call that a turnaround. Palladium was up 5 at $8.07. And what's interesting is the dollar was down again today, down 0.59. I mean, it was down significantly at 98.76. So I can't imagine gold continuing to be under pressure. It's all about the jobs report tomorrow. I think a lot of it was about the repeal and replace. We're going to talk about that in just a little bit. You had crude oil down huge, 2.36 at 45.46. I also got some information on that. And the paper markets today, you know, the Dow was down 6 points, 20,951. The NASDAQ was up 2 at 6,075. The S&P was up 1 at 2389. 10-year yield, that popped 0.05 at 2.36. Excuse me. So that's beginning to move up. And the euro gained a lot of strength today. It was up 0.92. And it finally got out of that 109 trading range, and we're in at 110 on the euro. So, it's like none of these numbers really make sense to what's really going on in the world of finance and the world of economies and in the world of reality, to be exact. But first we're going to talk about today Congress voted on repeal and replace, and by the slimmest of margins, and that is on the Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, and by the slimmest of margins, the House of Representatives passed the plan to replace Obamacare. It was by a very narrow 217 to 213, and it passed just by one vote. They needed two 16. And you know what? I watched some of that on YouTube at the beginning of it. And, you know, in the beginning, they come in there, they pat each other on the back. They're just a bunch of pompous asses and congratulatory everyone and so forth. And, you know, they sit down and, I mean, it was really, it just irritated me. And then when they go to vote, they have the different HRs and numbers that they vote on and so forth. There was three of them, I think, they voted on. And, you know, they're all up walking around. They do it electronically, so they probably have these little gadgets that they just carry, you know, like when you go to the restaurant and they give you these things to carry around until your table's ready, and they probably punch in their yay or nay. None of them are sitting down. They're all milling around, talking, making noise, and they get the first vote. They had 15 minutes to vote. Now, how long does it take you to vote? And then on the other two bills that were going through, they had 5 minutes to vote on. And again, they were all milling around. It's like, well, if you all sat down in your seats, and when he asked you to vote, it would take you 1 minute or two at the most to vote. It's like just wasted time, wasted space. And I don't know, it just kind of irritated me watching them. And but anyway, they did this, so I'm sure there's a lot of people happy. I'm sure there's a lot of people that are unhappy. The House Republicans, afterwards, they voted a bus for a trip down Pennsylvania Avenue to participate in a celebratory press conference, and who many members credited Donald Trump for helping getting the bill across the finish line. But what do we know about this bill? Not a whole lot.
And I'll tell you what we know. Is that it has to be approved by the Senate.
That's right. It has to go to the Senate.
So this is not a done deal. Everybody can be cheering on this thing. The Republicans can cheer because they can say, we did it. And if it's, you know, it's the Democrats might mess it up, but we did it. But they're going to, but they got to get through the Senate, yeah. And it's almost certainly not going to go, which means there's really not going to be a change.
Bob Corker, Senator Bob Corker, said that the House bill has zero chance of passing the Senate. He says, that's not the way it's going to work. He says, people are going to want to improve it. I don't see any way that it goes back in the form that it comes. So what's going to happen is when it gets to the Senate, they're going to sit there and they're going to make all kinds of changes. And then they're going to send it back to the Congress. And then, you know, then they'll have to decide whether those changes that the Senate did are good enough to that they're going to want to pass through. But the thing of it is, the Senate doesn't need any Democrats to pass it. They're using a procedural mechanism that will allow the bill to pass the Senate to pass with just 51 votes instead of the usual 60 votes. And there are 52 Republicans in the Senate. So, again, yeah, you're right. It's not going to pass the Senate. It's going to...
Not likely.
They're going to change it. They're going to make all kinds of changes to it. And then they'll send it back to...
So sometime by Christmas, maybe?
Well... Even the press secretary, Sean Spicer, he said yesterday it was almost impossible to determine the impact of the AHCA, despite the president's boast that it would improve care across the board. So, you know, it's almost impossible to determine that these new changes are going to really make any kind of, you know, good deals for any of the people. Last-minute deals, including promises to some members on future legislation. You know, here's the deals were to be made in order for a vote. And an additional $8 billion for people with pre-existing conditions in the current bill helped to get some of these squeamish moderates on board, a move that opened the doors for leadership to find enough votes. You know, I don't know what makes me more concerned. You know, we always hear that beware of the government that is coming to say we're here to help.
Yeah.
The first time. Now you have the government coming to say we're here to rescue you from the first help that the government gave you.
Yeah, so that's exactly right.
I'm really
right.
Not so sure. You know, I'm not so sure which I'm...
I think it's a step in the right direction, though. When government comes to rescue you from government, I think it's a step in the right direction.
I don't know. We've I don't think have we have ever had that before. So how?
No, this is a change. This is a big change.
You know. So and again, you're going to have half the people. Some of the mandates, it does gut the IRS requirement, Obamacare, that people with purchased health insurance or face a fine. Tax credits, the bill replaces subsidies for people to purchase insurance in the individual market in the Affordable Care Act based on income. with refundable tax credits based on age. The impact is that it will provide more people with assistance, but with fewer dollars, especially for the older Americans. The Medicaid expansion is frozen immediately. And it's interesting, is I don't know if this is frozen immediately today or after the Senate has passed and so forth. I would think after.
You know, after so they get done the, milling about,
so you're going to have a mad rush of the people that didn't sign up yet, you know, get in there and sign up. But the Medicaid expansion is frozen immediately, and in 2 years, the states can start to adopt either a block grant for the program or a new formula based on population instead of need. You're going to have high-risk pools. The bill provides $130 billion to states over 10 years for high-risk insurance pools to cover the most expensive to insure. You're going to have the state waivers, taxes. It repeals every Obamacare tax, including the 0.9% tax on couples making more than $250,000. Health savings accounts. The measure increases the allowable contribution limits of health savings accounts. Al, could you take over for just a moment, please?
Yes, I can. Got an article here from CNN Money. From Noriel Robini, also known as Dr. Doom. Dr. Noriel Robini, the man who called the 2008 financial crisis, fears Wall Street is badly underestimating the negatives lurking beneath President Trump's agenda. In fact, Robini, whose dark predictions gave him the nickname Dr. Doom, believes Trump and his policies have vaulted to the top of the list of risks threatening the global economy. Last year, the biggest concern was a hard landing in China. Before that, the danger was a collapse in the Eurozone. Now, the biggest elephant in the room, meaning the biggest danger, is the United States, according to Robini. He argued that the biggest uncertainty in the world, the biggest tail risk, comes from economic, foreign, and security policies of the Trump administration. He's concerned that it is unpredictable and therefore dangerous. Ben Bernanke, former Federal Reserve chief, he also suggested that investors may be overly optimistic. He told CNBC this week that Trump's goal of 3% growth is a pretty long shot, adding, "We're in a slow growth world now." That's interesting. A slow growth world is where he perceives us to be, not slow growth. Now, he may have misspoke there, but he's talking about slow growth for the whole global economy, not just the United States, which is evidence that we are in a global recession and or global depression. Robini pointed out several specific risks: protectionist policy, closing borders makes it hard to attract skilled workers, dramatic tax cuts blow up the U.S. deficit. The Committee for Responsible Federal Budget recently estimated that Trump's proposal could cost $5.5 trillion in lost revenue during the first decade. Now, that doesn't mean $5.5 trillion in lost spending, at least not necessarily. Saying that Trump's tax proposals could cost the government $5.5 trillion. My guess is that just means another $5.5 trillion that we're going to have to borrow. We're not going to raise the taxes. We're going to lower taxes, and they're going to lose $5.5 trillion, on over the decade. That translates into an average of a loss revenue of about $550 billion per year. That's about half the increase in the national debt wrought by the Obama administration during its 8 years in office, when they raised the deficit by about $1 trillion a year. Now, I'm going to bet, I've been betting for some time, that before long, more debt will be added by Trump until he at least matches and perhaps exceeds Obama's $1 trillion annual deficit. I'm arguing, hypothesis could be wrong, but I'm arguing that our debt-based monetary system feeds on, depends on, debt, and more debt. It is mother's milk to the United States debt monetary system. Got to have more debt. I'm going to bet you that Trump, before this is done, he matches Obama's $1 trillion annual deficit, and he may even exceed them. So we'll watch and see. Maybe I'm right, maybe I'm wrong, but a theory, but I think I have high confidence that it may be correct. Mm-hmm. So what do you think, Melody?
Oh, absolutely. And sorry I had to step away there for a few moments. So just had to take care of something. And there was something else that I'd wanted to talk about today, the oil markets. Mm-hmm. It's the weakest level for oil since November 29th. That was before, or actually I believe it was the day before OPEC had finalized their deal to slash production in a bid to end the epic oil glut. And big drop today. Many people expected, after they decided to slash production, everyone expected the oil to return to 60 and kind of stay there and even go above 60, and that really hasn't happened. You flash forward about 5 months, and this, the glut continues to, pressure on the oil prices, 5% today. Tom Gloza, global head of energy analysis at Oil Price Information Services, today is a real scary day for the billions of dollars invested in higher oil prices. Mm-hmm. We continue waiting for the slow motion, almost glacial rebalancing of crude. And remember, the first time we had this big dip down to oil down to 20, you had all of these companies, all these loans that are, still on the books, bankruptcies. Now they reinvested more thinking this was the day, they'd be able to recoup. And now how significant is this? It probably won't be very significant if it rebounds again. I always suspected that you'd see oil trade between $40 and $50. I think that's the new real world for oil is $40 and $50. And that's where it always seems to end back up, is in that range. But they also talked about the recent U.S. gasoline demand that is down by nearly 250,000 barrels per day from last year. They talk about drivers that are reacting to the fact that while prices at the pump remain low, they are still higher than last year. A gallon of gas goes for an average of 2.37 cents today, compared with below $2 in March of 2016. So last year it was cheap, under $2 a gallon for a little bit, and now it has bumped back up. My point to that is, if consumers pulled back on driving because of a 30-cent spread per gallon, that'll tell us how great this economy is doing if they can't absorb 37 cents per gallon. So again, here's another sign that it just doesn't. And yeah, I get that there are new automobiles that are fuel efficient and all these little electric vehicles and stuff like that. That could have some impact, but I don't think you'd see that type of a change in just 1 year. I don't think there was that much difference of purchasing all those vehicles in 1 year that would have that type of an impact on gasoline prices and the consumers pulling back on driving. So
well, I guess we're going to have to stop right there, Melody, and take a break for a couple of commercials. I'm Alfred Addis, here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, and we'll be right back. Please stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit csctalkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
Now's the time to do your buying for your gold and silver. You got a great little dip here today, and I don't expect it to stay at these levels for very long. This is the reasons why I'm short staffed today, and that's why I had to pick up the phone and take some calls for people purchasing the boxes of backdated Silver Eagles. They can save a few pennies on those as long as they're still available. And also golden. Great prices for gold. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. The only other thing that I wanted to talk about today, Alan, this came up right before the show, right before the program. So I really didn't, but it was interesting. And it was about, you know, we talk about the retail crisis, you know, whether it's online selling that is putting pressures on retail, your mom and pop shops, your brick and mortar stores, or is it just something that the economy is not, it was overbuilt and the economy isn't strong enough to support all the overbuilding that had happened. But here was something else that I don't think anyone has considered until why the retail crisis could be coming to American grocery stores. And you think, well, everybody has to eat. You know, that, it doesn't matter the conditions of the stores. And I'll tell you what, if you look at the conditions of some of your grocery stores, they're really pathetic. They're dirty. They're... You know, I mean, it's, you know, they haven't done anything, just like the retail stores. They've just let them, you know, go into ill repair. But so far, the grocery store has been immune to the online shopping until maybe just recently. And it could equate to more bankruptcies, maybe even falling prices for our food. But there's an invasion getting underway. There's a German retailer known for low prices and efficient operations, and they are expected to start an aggressive U.S. expansion in the coming weeks that could open as many as, now this is opening as many new stores across the East Coast by the summer of 2018. The company, which runs about 10,000 stores in Europe, has also set its sights on Texas, one of the most competitive grocery markets in the U.S. Analysts expect this company to expand to nearly $9 billion in sales by 2023. So the last thing the U.S. grocers need is more cutthroat competition. As the ranks of the U.S. grocery stores have swelled, food has become a way for the struggling brick-and-mortar retailers, such as the dollar stores and pharmacies, to compete for their customers. But now you have companies and online pressure like Amazon. They're beginning to sell fresh food. You see all kinds of advertisements on television that'll show fresh food delivered to your door, organic food delivered to your door. I know someone, one of my friends in Pennsylvania, her family, they actually buy their, they're in Lebanon, Pennsylvania, they buy their food from a place outside of Pennsylvania, it's all organic. They actually drive, they plan the meals for them.
Mm-hmm.
They drive the food. They stock her refrigerator. They come and clean it out the next week and put the new food in.
You mean they actually come to her house and load the food into
her
refrigerator?
They load the food in the refrigerator, and it's all organic.
They wash dishes or anything like that? They stop back after dinner to wash the dishes?
I said, do they eat it too? I don't know, but I said, are you kidding me? She says, no. She says, they come every week. They plan my menus, tell me what we should eat. She says,
why don't they just buy a servant like a normal person?
But she says, you know, she says, we're eating healthier. She has her grandkids living with her. She says, you know, there's three adults and two youths, a 7 and a 10-year-old, I think, boys. And she says, we're eating healthier. And she says, you know, this is because, you know, we don't get tempted. I take the grandkids to the grocery store. They don't end up, you know, throwing all kinds of things in there. So she says, we really cut back. She says, it's actually saving me money.
Really?
Yeah, because she doesn't
not
buy
buying
the
as much junk food.
She's not buying the unnecessary the things that they don't need.
Yep.
And she says it's great. We're eating healthier. We're, you know, they're all losing weight, you know. And she started this in January. So if more of this catches on, I've purchased vegan food that they deliver. I wanted to test it to see what, you know, how it works and so forth. They didn't come in and put it in my refrigerator, but I did purchase it online. And, you know, one meal, they charge one meal for two people. So I get two meals out of it. And, you know, it's a stretch, so it makes it a little bit more cost effective for me. And the food was beautiful. I mean, when it's received, it's all packaged so tidy, so neatly. You eat all your spices, all individually wrapped, very fresh. I mean, there wasn't any it was very nicely done, and it tasted great. So this is the competition that these grocery stores are going to have. And only about 1% of the roughly $1.5 trillion industry, the grocery business, has moved online. So that's made supermarkets an attractive real estate tenant in an era when other shopping has moved from the mall to the, you know, what you want to call it, the living room couch. So, yes.
The idea behind the internet retail boom is ultimately that the product is being delivered directly from at least the warehouse to the consumer. And there's no store in between. There's no brick-and-mortar store in
between.
That's
also very dangerous.
Well, nevertheless, that's what's happening. And that's what's been happening, and Amazon has been replacing those brick-and-mortar stores, essentially, and they're being replaced with trucks that deliver products. Now, when you stop to think about it, and you look at it and say, well, that's what they're doing for everything else in retail, you have to realize, you have to certainly consider the idea that why don't they do it for groceries?
Mm-hmm.
Why not the same thing for groceries that we're doing for buying golf clubs and tents and whatever else it is you want to buy over the internet? Why not do it for groceries? We are talking about the internet creating a new business model, and maybe that's not the proper term, but something like a business model that is diminishing brick-and-mortar stores across the board, which means commercial real estate. What are we going to do with all these buildings?
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have to bring a bunch of illegal aliens in to take the jobs Americans don't want, which is chipping the mortar off the bricks that were used to build the brick-and-mortar stores so we can sell the bricks to somebody else. Maybe we can chip the mortar off and send them to Mexico. But this is the evidence of a kind of revolution that's not just confined to retail, all right, retail stores. It's not just, it's moving on into even grocery stores. It's affecting commercial real estate, right? This means the price of commercial real estate is in a long-term downward trajectory. I mean, these buildings aren't just going to be worth less. They're going to be abandoned. What are we going to do? And this is a function of the internet. As long as it's here, it's probably cheaper for them. It's certainly cheaper for them to run a fleet of trucks than it is to run a grocery store.
Well, you know, we also have the competition idea. And when you talk about the Dollar General, you have the CVS, they all sell food. And I can remember the first dollar store when I went into, probably 10 years ago, maybe 13 years ago, and they started selling food. I thought, wow, I wouldn't even want to touch that. They had eggs in there. I think, oh, how old are these eggs? You know. So I thought, well, I'm going to look to see what the expiration date was. And, you know, it was typical, just a regular grocery store, you know, expiration date. You can get a dozen of eggs for $1. You know, we go to the grocery store and it costs you $3 or more. So...
Were they chicken eggs or some other kind of eggs?
I don't know.
Did
I didn't
they
buy
say
them.
What kind of eggs they were?
I didn't buy them. But I thought it was interesting because it wasn't the old food or you know, the food that nobody wants. You know, this is the food from China. So, no. I mean, it was... So, but the point is you have a lot of people going in the stores. There's food available for them to buy there. So you have the dollar store. The Dollar General alone added more than 900 stores last year, ending 2016 with more than 13,000 locations. The chain, which generates roughly 75% of revenue from consumable items such as food, soap, and paper towels, is planned to open another 1,000 stores this year. CVS, which operates nearly 8,000 standalone locations, is betting on food to boost store traffic. Now, I wouldn't go to CVS to, you know, buy my food, but if you're there to pick up a prescription or, you know, getting, you know, something that you need at the pharmacy, well, you know, and it's... You know, it's, you know, like the old
convenience
stores and so forth. So a lot of pressure is going to be putting on these grocery stores. But the problem is, I see, is we know there's only, what, a 3-day supply of food at these grocery stores.
Yeah, I know.
So that gets eliminated. So if something happens, there's no backup coming.
No, I understand.
You know, if everybody
it becomes
finds their...
increasingly efficient and increasingly vulnerable at the same time.
Yeah.
Right. So this is one of those things where it's certainly a convenience, and it appears to be a wave that's happening in our economy and the nation, whatever. Retail buildings, their value has to be falling. And I would suppose when you talk about office buildings, even that might be falling, or at least inclined to fall over the course of the next, you know, 10 years, simply because more people are perhaps going to be staying home and doing their work at a computer at their home where they don't need a car to get to work, right? And they don't need to go to an office and don't need to put on a suit and tie, and there's a lot of people that can just get by working out of the home office. I don't know how large that wave is right now. People have talked about it for, who knows, 10, 20 years, but it seems to be a reality we can expect is going to happen. As businesses are put under more stress, they're going to become increasingly competitive. And if they can get somebody, you know, if they can hire someone in India to outsource labor than have it done in India rather than have it done in the United States, they do. It follows that if they can outsource their work to somebody's home rather than coming to our office, they're going to do that. And as more people are working out of their homes, next thing you know, you don't need as many offices. There's more vacancy. The price of the rent goes down per square foot in office buildings, and then eventually the price of the office buildings themselves. And what we're talking about here are some massive financial changes in this country that will not be easily absorbed. This isn't just a situation of, oh, the world is changing. Yeah, it's changing. And a bunch of what we have relied on up until now to make money, real estate, commercial real estate, office space, brick and mortar retail stores and the rest of that, all of a sudden they're going to take a downturn. It doesn't mean they're going to collapse, doesn't mean there aren't going to be any, but there is going to be a decline, and that means a decline in prices, and you have to wonder will that affect the entire economy.
The number of shopping trips Americans made to buy food rose 1% last year. And that doesn't seem like a whole lot.
It's not.
But it's the first annual gain in at least a decade. The shift in shopping behavior is being driven in part by the increasing preference for fresh food. And you have Americans that are shopping more often and buying fewer items per trip. Now, my question is, there's a lot of reasons you could think of that. Number one, prices are so expensive. And people are, you know, their dollar is not going as far as it used to. So they can't go once a week and buy, you know, a grocery cart of food and not have to go back except maybe for milk or bread like we used to. So is that part of the problem? And so you have people going, it isn't so much for fresh food, it's just so much that, you know, they can't buy as much as they once could because of the cost of everything. There's a lot of reasons, you know. And I think shopping, too, the grocery store, I think it used to be some sort of a social. I can remember going to the grocery store on Friday nights with my grandparents. That was a big deal.
Yeah. Look at me. I'm buying stuff.
Yeah, I don't think it was that. I mean, it was, you know, I got to play with the toys. They used to have toys in the grocery store on the one lane. The kids would always go to the tours. And, you know, I mean, it was just, it was more of a bonding with your family than maybe a social event, I suspect. But I don't know. It is changing. And the pattern, there is a long-term risk for grocers. And you're right. You're going to have these empty buildings. We have the lack, you know, no more than, you know, 3 days of food on the shelf now. Something happens and you have a run on the food, baby, it's going to be weeks before you get food. So again, the importance of storing your food. Make sure you have some backup food for yourselves.
Mm-hmm.
This is the things that happen that no one really talks about or thinks about. And we're here to help you prepare for, and this isn't tomorrow. I don't think you'll see, you know, these changes tomorrow, but they're going to be gradual changes. And again, when we talk about gold and silver, yeah, it's really, you know, people over 50 are the ones that buy gold and silver for the most part. So it's a way that you can protect your children and your grandchildren, you know, for, because they are the ones that will be faced with these bigger changes and challenges if the dollar doesn't collapse prior
to
that.
I'm not even sure that's true, Melody. I mean, things are moving so quickly. We are all going to be faced with some extraordinary challenges. I mean, the next 10 years will be unlike any other decade. I doubt that any of us have seen a decade in our entire life or imagined a decade that's going to match what's coming over the next 10 years. And I don't even know what that's going to be. But you can just see that, you can sense the accelerating change, the rate of acceleration and changes. And, you know, God knows what it's going to be. But, I mean, this is like a ride at Six Flags or something, a new roller coaster. Holy cow, I thought they were fast when they're going 60, 80 miles an hour. No, this one's going 200 miles an hour.
Well, I meant as far as a grocery store.
So, I know. I'm just talking in general.
But yeah, but you're absolutely correct. I mean, yeah, you are going to see major changes in these. And I'm not talking about our monetary policy and, you know, what's going to happen and, you know, economy and so forth. I'm just talking, you know, how the world is going to be changing and what the buying habits are going to be in the future. And you know, it's...
some of us are. I am becoming mature, Melody. I'm not getting old, I'm getting
finally.
Mature. Yeah, finally. They said it would never happen. It would never happen, but sure enough, here I am. The world is changing.
Yeah.
And you know, one of the other and the point behind all of this is that the system appears to be so fragile that it may not be able to absorb these changes easily. And if it can't, then there's going to be trouble. Not just change, but trouble. Let's take a break. Commercials. Melody and I'll be right back. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival.
Oh, won't you tell me again?
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We
all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hi, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Alfred Addis, here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. What's next, Melody?
1-800-375-4188. And I'm only going to add one more thing, then you can go on to something else. I can't remember if it was Joan Vion or DV Kid. They made a comment maybe 15, 20 years ago, probably 20 years ago, with all these weight loss programs, your Nutrisystems and Jenny Craig. Well, they were the only two food by mail order. They really started the programs. And she said that was they were testing. It was an experiment. It was testing because eventually the government will use these programs, the access and the distribution centers and so forth, to distribute the food to the people. And it makes sense. And you know, and when you look at the world that we live in today, it doesn't really seem that far off. I mean, we talk about governments giving people checks because there's no jobs for them. So they write them a check every month. Mm-hmm. And it's the same kind of thing. If you don't have money, if you don't have a job, and the government writes you a check, well, maybe they'll give you your food, too. And they can put your little...
It really would be interesting if the government started to supply the food for people on welfare. Instead of sending them the money, they supply
food. Well, they kind of do with the food stamps to some degree.
Yeah, but even that, you got to go out and pick it up and haul it home yourself. Yeah. What if they started delivering it to the house and it didn't include any ho-hos, any ripple, any junk food?
Well, the government...
that necessarily be... I don't know. I mean, it would be awkward. You'd have whole communities that were being fed at the same time. I don't know what would... There may be some... I don't know how this would work out logistically. But I wonder, is there something to be gained there? Is it something that's inevitable? Maybe it's a gain. Maybe it's a loss. I don't know. Is it inevitable? But changes are upon us.
Well, government feeds the Indians. You know, they've been giving them food, and I've read, many, 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 many years ago that was part of the reason why a lot of the Indians have diabetes as an epidemic in their communities. The Pima Indian in Arizona. Why do the Indians have why is diabetes an epidemic? Because they were provided for food that really didn't manage with their...
genetics.
With their genetics.
Yep.
You know, and I'm not talking that they, they went many years ago that they started supplying food. So
I think
it interfered with their health.
I think one of the things that interferes, and they put you on a reservation, you're in trouble. When they put you in a ghetto, a hood, you're in trouble. When they give you welfare, all right, you think, hey, I'm getting over, I'm getting a free check, I don't have to work. I think that's almost a deadly combination. When you don't have to work, I think you are predisposed to die. And I don't necessarily mean psychologically, but I mean you sit on your butt. You're good. You don't have a job. You're on welfare. Sit on your butt. You can't be surprised to get diabetes. You got to go out and do something. And if you're not working, chances are you're not doing anything. I think that welfare is dangerous. I think it's unhealthy. I'm not complaining about giving the money. I'm saying it's dangerous to receive the money. You become kept in a way that has to be debilitating, and it is better. You're better off to work 40 hours a week for $5 an hour than you are to collect $800 a month out of welfare, in my opinion. I'm sure a lot of people would disagree with that, but that's the way it appears to me. I think all of these programs, government, we're here to help you. Oh, please, give me a break. Let me work, for God's sake. All right, let me absorb some stress and exert some energy. Just sit on your butt. My God, it's a formula for death. Having said all that, here's another point. You know, we talked earlier about the price of oil dropping. There's a headline here from investors.com, investorsnews.com, and it says, as oil crashes, this chart shows why OPEC is trapped. And what it reminds me of is, I think it was probably the first book on economics I ever read in. This goes back, into the 60s, maybe even the late 50s, but I think it was the early 60s. And it was a book on the Kondratiev wave that was discovered by Nikolai Kondratiev. He was a communist economist who predicted that during the Great Depression, while communists in Russia, which is where he was located, they said the United States is collapsing. It's never going to rise again because it's in the Great Depression, and that's it. It's finished. And he said, no, it's part of a 50-year business cycle. He identified what he described as roughly 50 years, and we had 50 years between peaks, and then we went down to valleys and peaks and so on. And I can remember out of that book, one of the things they pointed out is that you can tell something about where the economy is by the price of commodities. And commodities fall during a depression. Prices of commodities fall during a depression. And to some degree, that's what we seem to be seeing with the price of crude oil right now. And this headline talking about why OPEC is trapped. OPEC is an organization that's based on the production and sale of commodities. Crude oil. Natural gas. Right? This is evidence when we see that OPEC is going down, crude oil is going down, commodities are going down. This is classical in economics. This is evidence that we are in at least a recession and maybe worse. I've mentioned this before, but during the Great Depression, I saw an article back, I don't remember, a decade ago. I don't remember when I first saw it, but it was amazing to me. Serious scholarship, and they pointed out that the Great Depression, we look back and we think in terms of the Great Depression, started in 1929 with a collapse of the stock market. And it was like throwing a switch. We went from the roaring 20s to the depressed 30s, and just like throwing a switch in October of 1929. Right? But it wasn't like that. According to this research, according to one source, and I don't even remember the source, but according to the source, there was not a general consensus that we were even in a depression until 1933, which means we went through 4 years. In retrospect, we look back and we say, oh, that was a depression started in 1929, but people weren't fully aware of it until 1933, but a general consensus. It was 1933 before half the country sat back and said, you know, I think we're in a depression. Now, the point behind that, if it can happen in relationship to the Great Depression, I can't see a reason why it can't happen in relationship to where we are right now. We see the prices of commodities falling. That signals recession and or depression. We see the price of crude oil falling, recession and or depression. We see OPEC is threatened with a kind of destruction if they're not careful, and OPEC is a commodity-based organization. Again, you can look at that. And you look out the window and you say, are we in a depression right now? Are we in a recession? Where are we? Or where are we going? And what is that going to do to us? And I don't have an answer for you exactly, but I'm just saying we see evidence that suggests that maybe we're not just in a slowdown. I mentioned earlier in the program when I was reading one of the articles referenced Ben Bernanke, and he said we are in a world slowdown. Well, that's consistent with a world depression. certainly a world recession and arguably a world depression. And if it's true, what does it indicate? It doesn't just mean that a lot of us are going to be out of work. It means that we are on the edge of potentially difficult and dangerous times, because if we are sliding into a recession, or we're already in it, if we're sliding into a depression, or we're already in it and we just haven't exactly realized it yet, if that's where we're going, how are we going to pay the existing debt? And the answer is we're not. And I'm not just talking about the national debt. I'm talking about your credit card debt and the mortgage on your house and the loan on your car. How's that debt going to be paid if it turns out we're sliding deeper and deeper into a recession and or a depression, and you're going to run out of a job? How are you going to pay that debt? And what happens when you can't pay on the house and you can't pay on the car? What happens then? Where are you going? What's your next job? This is not just a reflection of doom and gloom and the rest of that. It is, from my perspective, these are reasonable questions. There is evidence to sit there and say, wait a second, maybe, not necessarily, but maybe it's important that you get ready for a serious problem. And this isn't a new theme. This is far from a new theme on this program, but still, you see some evidence and you say, I don't know. Is that just an anomaly? Is it just an anomaly that the price of crude oil has fallen to $45 a barrel and it'll pop back up to 50 or 55 next week or a month from now? Is that what's going to happen? I don't know. But you can't ignore the evidence that's there in front of you. And it's unsafe to ignore that evidence. You have to make, I don't know. It's like if your house is made out of sticks, like one of the little pigs, it's prone to catch fire. Right? It's not doom and gloom to say maybe it's not a bad idea to get some fire insurance for that house you've got made out of sticks, or start changing over to where you have a house made out of bricks. One of the little pigs had a house made out of bricks. He might not have needed tornado insurance because he was made out of bricks. But the one made out of twigs need fire insurance, tornado insurance. It's cheaper, but, blah, blah, blah. Point to all of this is there's just a little evidence that's floating around. Maybe it's real evidence. Maybe it's just coincidence. But it suggests that it's not a bad idea to get ready because there may be trouble headed your way. Melody, what else we have to talk about here? You got something you want to get into? Melody?
Yes, this weekend we do have the
French.
You had
your mute button on, didn't you?
This weekend we do. This is the third time I'm saying it. We have the French vote. And, of course, there was a debate last night. And the National Front leaders are beginning to acknowledge that maybe the Marine Le Pen may be headed for defeat on this Sunday's presidential election. She just didn't seem to get the blows that she needed last night in debate to, get any leeway or to get ahead or to gain any extra points away from Macron in the debate last night. Scoring 40% in the runoff would be an enormous victory. The candidate's niece and fellow National Front lawmaker, Marine Le Pen, Marianne Le Pen, had told the newspapers. Le Pen called her rival the candidate of savage globalization, Macron countering that she is unworthy of leading France. And, the most disgusting part of this all is Macron received the support of Barack Obama. He posted a video on the former economy minister's website saying he was rooting for Macron. I've admired the campaign that Emmanuel Macron has run. He stood up for liberal values, praising him as someone who appeals to people's hopes and not their fears.
Well, you can hope in one hand and do something in the other hand and see which one fills up first. If Obama's for Macron is it's a good reason for my opinion to say, oh my God, better hope Marine Le Pen wins. I mean, this is they're doing Hillary and Trump again, and I'm just sitting back and saying, oh my No.
But I think the French are going to do it. I don't think. I doubt that Le Pen is going to pull this off, and that's been conventional knowledge for months.
Yeah, but
she would be one of the two that go into the primary, but she would not prevail at that point. And this isn't exactly news.
Well, she actually did tremendous beating out the two establishment people.
Yeah, I agree with that. That wasn't a surprise.
Well, in a way it is. But they just so it shows that the French people want to get away from the old establishment. But Macron isn't any different. He's just a younger of the old establishment. He's a Hollande, protege. But she did say last night that the hatred was poured on me, on us, on the people, on their concerns was unprecedented. Le Pen said the elites don't accept that the people try to eat at the table of power. And
and that's true globally.
Yeah, it's very true.
I mean, I'm in favor of, even if Le Pen loses, this is still a kind of victory and a shot across the bow of the elitists, the oligarchy, in France, in Germany, in the United States, in the same sense that Trump's candidacy and victory was. Now, how it's going to work out, they may buy anybody who gets elected, and you may be the fastest way to become a capitalist in this world is get yourself elected running as a communist, and then you can become a rich capitalist. I mean, I don't want to brag about it, but ask Bernie Sanders. How many houses does he have? He should have a degree in real estate with all the homes he has. We're going to have to let it go at that. We're out of time. Want to thank all of you for listening. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank and Todd, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.